Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Tulips in Tuscany podcast. We're your hosts, Steffi,
Paige,
and Sarah.
And we're on a mission to share your stories and provide some awesome resources for families touring Holland.
We are three moms to some pretty incredible kiddos, and we're excited that you're here to navigate this unexpected journey with us through beautiful Holland.
Okay, guys, I'd like to welcome my friend and our guest, Katie, to the podcast. Katie, I have to say, when we were talking a while back, I just knew in the back of my mind, I was like, this is just the perfect space for you to come on. So I'm really thankful that we were able to make this happen, and I'm so excited to get the conversation going.
So I am super excited that my son and I just started working with a company called Simple Spectrum. They are one of the highest quality vitamins and minerals in the most bioavailable forms and nothing else, which is really how supplements should be. Their mission was to create the kind of nutraceutical supplement that they wanted to see available based on the latest scientific research and free from the additives packed into so many other similar products on the market. I love that they understand it's not always realistic to get your child to take multiple products in a day, which is why they created an all-in-one prebiotic. Their supplement provides the nutritional needs of the developing nervous system with extra support for individuals with autism, like my son Lane, by addressing potential dietary deficits often seen in children with autism due to picky eating habits and sensory issues. So be sure to head to the link in our podcast notes to check them out.
Katie, thank you again for joining us and letting us take up all of your time asking all these questions. So we finished up the last one, just briefly touching on sleep. Can you talk to us a little bit about the importance of sleep? I know you're a pediatric sleep consultant and you have so much experience with sleep training and training parents, because a lot of sleep training has to do with moms and dads.
So sleep, I always say, is nature's cure-all, which seems like an obvious answer. But when you start to pry a little bit about somebody, their sleep habits, when they are currently experiencing lots of stress, lots of anxiety, things like that, often the sleep isn't that great. So the sleep is the first thing that you want to get in alignment. For children, especially, you know, after a certain age, I think it switches around like 8 to 10 months, a child's body relies more on sleep at night than it does for food. And so it's really important to start consolidating sleep, because it's actually brain food. So a switch actually happens around that time where it's important to make sure that you're helping the child get consolidated sleep. And that seems like a no-brainer, but a lot of times a lot of kids have trouble with sleep, and a lot of things that we do in order to try to help them sleep actually impair that process. And then we have habits that take place, and then we have to kind of unlearn and help them unlearn things so they can sleep well. So sleep is paramount for everybody, whether you're a little one or an adult, and prioritizing that, especially if you're not feeling the way you want to feel in your everyday life, is incredibly, incredibly important. So for adults, that's incorporating some of that self-care and having a really great soothing bedtime routine, just the way you would want your child to have one as well. And with kids, it varies obviously on age, but if you're struggling with chronic sleep deprivation and chronic sleep issues with your child, I would highly recommend getting some advice and some support, because there's always an easier way. And getting that nipped in the bud so everybody's sleeping well as soon as possible is ideal.
I've had several friends who have had hired sleep trainers, and they said it is the best money that they've ever spent getting their kids to sleep.
That.
And then they get a good night's sleep and everybody's happy. So it's money well spent.
Yeah, I agree. For sure.
When I met Katie, she was first, she was primarily doing sleep consulting, and I heard all of her stories about how these parents were just, they needed her so bad. And then she would go, and then they would come back telling her that they changed their lives. She changed their lives. Getting sleep just completely changed their lives. So Katie gave me some recommendations for books to read. And I think that might be something some parents might want to know, if you have any book recommendations for them to read about sleep training.
Yeah. And so part of me is honestly like, it takes so long to read a book, and when you're sleep deprived, it gets confusing. And then what I tend to find is that parents will read part of the book, and then they'll Google, and then they'll get all these like conflicting opinions. And so I honestly would save the time and money on a book and hire somebody, even if it's for a 30-minute consult, because the idea of what we do in the sleep practice is that we've read all the books. And so we can in 30 minutes, like, tell you what to do and what not to do and provide different options for that. So I would bypass that. If you're looking for a book on child development, The Whole Brain Child is a really great book that helps explain how the different brain hemispheres work. And it gets into sleep too, but it's a really great book as far as understanding mechanisms of the brain and the subconscious. But for sleep, honestly, at this point, because there's always new sleep books, I would Ixnay that and get a referral for a local sleep consultant and ask them for a 30-minute call.
That's great advice.
Yeah, that's great advice. There's no point in reading all the books, honestly, because there's so many. And if it doesn't have exactly what you need, say that you're an outlier in some way, mm-hmm. you're really going to need somebody who's read all of them to be like, okay, this is what might actually work best for you.
I know there's some Instagram right. pages out there too, who are like infant sleep related consultants. Yeah. And they'll post a lot of things or randomly let people do like Q&A stickers and answer questions for them about their kiddos specifically. So that's probably really helpful too, because you can just ask them right in the moment.
Yeah.
And I think you hit it on the head about if you're sleep deprived. I mean, if I was sleep deprived, I would not be able to read a book and take it all in and make sense of it all. So I would be the one spending the money for.
Yeah, it kind of goes in one ear and out the other. Mm-hmm. The Family Sleep Institute is the school that I went to and studied sleep at. Their website is great for having referrals for every sleep consultant that they have in different states. And we're actually international, so around the world. So looking at that website, there's a lot of great free resources on there as well. So Family Sleep Institute, check that website out if you're in need of sleep help, because they'll have resources for you on any level that you might need it.
Perfect. We'll add that to our podcast notes for sure.
Yeah, that's awesome. I definitely recommend a consultant, because I know for us with Tristan, we had Katie on and off. And we were like, we weren't ready because of the medical challenges, and we were ready, then we weren't. And then we just went back and forth. But, you know, your situation changes so rapidly. When I would read something one week, it would apply. And then the following week, he would go through another, you know, if you haven't read the Wonder Week book, he'd be going through a leap and his brain would be developing and then things would be totally different. So mm-hmm. I feel like getting someone that already has all the troubleshooting behind them is also really helpful.
Okay, guys, we're going to slightly switch gears here. Now, Katie, you're an expert in so many different topics. It's hard to narrow down what questions and topics we'd like to cover. But one that stood out to me was regarding psyche. Can you tell us why this is so important for sustainable change?
Yes. So let's talk a little bit about how the brain works. So we have three minds, technically. We have a conscious mind, a subconscious mind, and then like a superconscious, which some people would talk about as like an intuition, sort of spirit, universal consciousness. The conscious mind is what we're consciously aware of. So the words that we speak, if we're overanalyzing something, trying to think through it, we're in the conscious. Most people spend the majority of their lives only operating out of their conscious mind. Think of the conscious mind as like the annoying aunt that always has feedback you don't really want, right? She's not really in tune with what's going on, but she's definitely going to be, you know, running her mouth. That's the conscious mind. It should be in charge, or is only able to manage about 5% of your entire experience. And usually we lean on it for all of it. The subconscious mind is in charge of about 95% of your experience. And that's where you'll hear words like, that's your conditioning, you're conditioned that way, your programming. That's all subconscious. So the subconscious primarily is driving your experience and the way that you view and perceive life 95% of the time. And the conscious mind just responds to it. So we're actually, people just don't love to hear this, but you're actually sort of a puppet mimicking out your subconscious conditioning at least 95% of the time in your life. And so the conscious mind, which people refer to as like the ego, will fight that and be like, no, there's always a choice. Well, think about things like New Year's resolutions. We're like, no, I'm committed to this. I want this. I want to achieve this goal. And New Year's resolutions are infamous for being thrown to the wayside. Why is that? If we have a conscious goal, something that we want and desire, and we've read the book or we've talked to the person, we know what steps to take, why is it so hard to take the steps? Everybody has areas of their life that they struggle with a lot of consistent resistance in, and that indicates that you have limiting conditioning subconsciously in this area. So start thinking about everything that you perceive and everything that you believe in life is actually subconscious, and it's either limiting or supportive. So the areas that are not causing distress and that it's very easy for you to take action in and that flow very well for you indicate that you have supportive belief systems, supportive conditioning. Areas that you have a lot of resistance in, you would have a lot of limiting conditioning. There are only four modalities that can work directly with the subconscious. So things like traditional therapy, talk therapy are all conscious tools. And they're kind of old, outdated paradigms for healing. We now have much cooler tools that work directly with the subconscious and allow us to get in there so we can actually make changes to that 95%. And when we do that, when you go to take an action step towards your conscious goal, you will experience ease and no more resistance. Suddenly it's just gone. And that's what up-leveling your belief systems look like. So everything that we respond to or feel in life comes from a belief that we have. And our beliefs are primarily formed between the ages of 0 and 14. So kids that age are like sponges. So the subconscious processes about 40 million bits of information per minute, where the conscious mind is only about 40 bits. So imagine your child sitting in the house for an hour, and over that hour, that would be, I don't know, 400 million or something bits of information they just accumulated just by sitting. Nothing has to be done. They're just downloading everything from their parents' hand gestures to tone of voice to things that they can't even hear and that they're not aware over there. That forms their subconscious. And then as they grow up, that conditioning drives their experience. And that's why, as hard as most people try, they often act just like their mothers because they can't help it. It's their conditioning. So understanding that conditioning is the primary driver of our experience and that only a handful of tools can actually work directly with it is really, really important. And Psych-K is one of those that I use. So in my practice, we work directly with the subconscious so that we can eliminate limiting beliefs and create new ones directly, which is super fun. And part of that feeds into trauma, which is, I know, a question y'all had and wanted to chat about. So the other use for Psych-K is working with trauma. Trauma is defined in subconscious terms as any memory that still holds an emotional charge when you bring it to your mind. So whether that's when you were laughed at in the third grade for falling down in the hallway, when you think about it now, you still get an emotional charge. You could feel it. That would be considered trauma, all the way down the line to abuse or traumatic birth, anything. If when you think about it and bring it to mind, you can still feel it, it's considered trauma. Trauma is always alive in the subconscious. And so even if you're not consciously bringing that memory to mind, if when you do, it still has a charge, it means that it's looping all the time. So we end up in states of like chronic stress, exhaustion, anxiety, often because we have a lot of trauma loops that are just playing on repeat in our brains. The other thing to note is that the mind doesn't know the difference between something that's happened and something that you fantasize about. So when we try to imagine worst case scenarios as a way to get ahead of them, what we're actually doing is self-traumatizing. And now we've created files or memories in our brain of that experience. So when someone says, I have this fear of, you know, my pet dying, and I've thought about it a million times, and now it's so overwhelming for me. It's because they've literally experienced subconsciously that memory happening 1,000 times. So that's it will crazy. Be very painful.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I do that all the time too. I always think like about worst case scenario so that like I can try and, like you said, be ahead, you know? So
So I follow this family on Instagram and their son passed away from SIDS. And after I had my baby, I don't know why, hearing their story, I started playing that same scenario in my head. And so I would wake up multiple times a night and go check on the baby and like just like have that in my head. And now you bringing that up, I'm like, oh my gosh, I've totally like traumatized myself thinking about this over and over again. And still to this day, I still stress about it at night. It's getting better, but it's interesting the things that we have traumatized ourselves over.
Mm-hmm.
It's wild.
Yeah.
The brain is wild.
Just the idea that our brain is our navigation system, right? We have a body, we have a brain, and it's always fascinating to me how little people actually know about how it works. And so it's like having a car, this amazing car with all these great tools in it, and we're dragging it down the street by a rope because we just never, no one ever taught us how to understand how this actually functions. And so that's why like the present, being present and practicing mindfulness is so important, because our conscious mind is the part of ourselves that's going to be like, yeah, let's play this out a million times, because then we'll have conquered it and it won't scare us anymore. And that's just not true. So a lot of the thoughts we think, even if they make logical sense in some way, are just not true. And we know if something is true for our purposes by how it feels in the body. So if you're telling yourself a story and it's freaking you out every time you tell it, you are out of alignment. You are telling yourself something that's not only untrue, but you're scaring the out of yourself. I like bleep that out because I didn't. You're just scaring yourself, and, right, and you are actually self-traumatizing. And not only that, but energetically we get what we focus on. So if we're focused on what we don't want and what we're afraid of, what is going to happen, we automatically increase the likelihood for that event actually taking place. So it's super important to gain control of our thoughts and where our focus goes. And that's where the self-care comes into play, because it allows us to learn how to practice staying present, refocusing our minds, so that in daily life, we can start bringing ourselves back to the present moment and curtail the likelihood for self-trauma through worry.
So I was going to say that I think a lot of special needs parents end up in those trauma loops because they constantly do have to think about what comes next and what's the next case scenario. I know when Tristan had his leukemia scare, we were constantly thinking about, okay, well, we have our appointment on Monday. We got to prep. We have to do this. We have to do that. But then I think distancing yourself from that is what becomes super hard. And so you end up traumatizing yourself over those medically complex moments, or the NICU, or, you know, the NICU is probably the best example, because you could very well not be thinking about something, and then all of a sudden you get a DSAT and you hear the ding, 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 and then everybody rushes over to your kid. And so I feel like that was the perfect moment for us to think about how we traumatize ourselves, because that's immediately what came to my head.
Yeah. And that's legitimate trauma. And so when you're having to go through situations like that, and it's part of everyday life, at least for, you know, hopefully a short period of time, really taking care of yourself is important. And I would encourage any parents that are in that situation to seek active trauma work, seek someone to support you through healing trauma. Otherwise that will stay in a loop and it will affect you long-term, even when you're not consciously thinking about it. The other part of Psych-K and like working with the mind and doing this kind of practice is helping people get really accustomed to feeling their feelings. So like, you know, Paige, when you were in that situation and you have to plan for Monday and the appointment, the conscious mind's good for that. It's like, logistically, what do I need to do to get ready? I have to pack this bag. This needs to be here. Check, check, check. The second part of that is, what emotions coming up for me knowing that this appointment's coming? And instead of playing out a scenario to get rid of the emotion, we learn how to sit with emotion and actually release it. And that doesn't come from thinking about it. It comes from actually feeling it. And it turns out that most adults don't know how to actually feel their feelings and access their emotional body and can move emotion without overthinking. So that's another big part of my practice, is embodiment of the emotional system, really teaching you how to get in your body and feel the emotion, move it. And then concentrate on what you can actually do as far as an action step is concerned.
So once you have them feel that emotion and then pull it out, how did you get to that subconscious trauma or emotion in the first place? Because if it's in your subconscious, it's probably kind of deep down in there, right?
Great question. So Psych-K actually uses muscle testing to determine distress in the body. So
I was going to ask.
Yeah. So when we're saying something out loud, we're almost like human lie detectors. When we say something out loud that our subconscious does not believe, our system immediately goes into a state of distress, and it's quantifiable. It's measurable.
Do you do it with the arm, like the arm out where they push on the arm?
I do it with the arm in person, and virtually I do it, well, through the quantum field, essentially. So I end up, I'm trained to, it's called surrogation. I can train to surrogate for your energy. So I can sync up with your energy so that when you're speaking, I can muscle test what you're saying, and I'll know whether or not your subconscious is in a state of distress based on your physiological feedback.
Wow. So
I'm going through a Bible study right now, with my church, and we're actually, it's a Bible study about forgiveness and kind of talking about pulling trauma out basically, and then learning forgiveness and reconciliation and So we were talking about the muscle testing, and I've actually gone through or done it before. But it's the same thing where they're doing muscle testing and then they're kind of pulling some of these traumas out for you and then they pray over you. And, but it's similar. So that's why I was curious if that's how you do that. Cause it's kind of a new thing. Mm-hmm. I think that's out there.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah. I love that you would choose that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Our bodies know best. And it's, you know, it's the same idea, like on a more specific, you know, way, but like when you walk into a room and you're like, there's a bad vibe in here. It's like, well, how can you feel that? Or right. When you just know someone's not telling the truth and perhaps they're even lying to themselves, but you just know, you can feel it. Mm-hmm. We're all so energetically in tune and so empathic in so many ways that are typically underdeveloped, but we have all kinds of senses that haven't been fully developed, but yeah.
So cool.
Well, while we are talking about trauma, can you tell us just maybe some tips for dealing with trauma and how does it affect us and those around us when we don't necessarily deal with trauma in the right way?
Such a loaded question, Sarah, because when
leave it up to me.
Yeah. Well, we don't deal with trauma in a healthy way that actually allows us to deal with it. We rob ourselves and everyone around us from getting to know who we actually are. So when we're in active trauma loops, they take over so much of our experience, even that we're not consciously aware of, that it keeps us from fully developing into who we are and who we're meant to be and what we're meant to do here and how we're meant to serve. We end up just being looping on trauma all the time instead of really moving forward in our path. So it has all kinds of implications. Yeah, that's what I would say. You rob yourself and everyone else of getting to know who you really are and what you're really doing here, essentially. No big deal. So tips for dealing with trauma, I would say seek help for it. So find a tool, practice, modality, practitioner that can help you move through it.
Okay.
And the number one thing you can do is don't invalidate your trauma. A lot of people are like, I shouldn't feel this way. So-and-so has this worse. They have guilt about their trauma. Trauma is trauma is trauma. It's all the same to the body. And while the emotional impact or perceived impact might vary, your trauma, whatever it is 100% relevant. It's 100% valid and it's 100% affecting you, period. A lot of people try to talk themselves out of it or invalidate it.
Oh, that's me. I do that 1000%. I'll always be like, oh, well, someone has it worse, or just, that's just my way of, well, I mean, not necessarily coping with it, but I'll just tell myself, you know, it's not that bad. Someone has it worse, or someone's child has it worse, or something like that. And I do feel like I definitely invalidate it.
Probably yeah. Most people. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably most people that deal with it like that. And so I guess my question is, for those people who are so stubborn that they're like, I'm not going to go talk to somebody or get help, do you have any tips for at least something that they can do on their own at home until they maybe are ready to seek help?
Yeah. So that would go back to nervous system again. So Okay. Active trauma loops live in the subconscious, and the subconscious regulates the nervous system. So if you have a lot of active trauma, again, any memories that still hold emotional charges that are always playing, that means your nervous system is working overtime all the time. And so in order to get to a place of like peace and non-attachment and live in that way, we got to get rid of those trauma loops, and that's subconsciously. So engaging in self-care helps calm the nervous system, which can help alleviate some of the constant tension that comes with having trauma or unprocessed trauma. And so practice self-care, regulate your nervous system. What you're going to kind of do is just mitigate the effects of all the trauma in your system and kind of balance them a little bit, but they won't heal. And so really want to get in there and uproot it. And I would encourage everyone who's listening, semantics are really important. So if you say, I invalidate my trauma as a way of coping, maybe change it to, I invalidate my trauma as a way of avoiding, because that's mm-hmm. what it is. It's yeah. not actually dealing, it's avoiding. And so when we can start speaking to ourselves in those like kind of harsh but truthful terms, it's like, okay, you know, at this point, I'm telling myself I'm invested in ignoring or avoiding my trauma. And like, mm-hmm. when you say that, it's like, oof, I don't want to do that. All right, what would I rather do instead? I'm committed now that I understand what trauma actually does to my system and how it, you know, lives in my subconscious all the time. I'm committed to finding a way to start pulling that out. For people who are, again, on a budget, affordable care, there's definitely different practitioners who have sliding scales. My partner and I do actually group drop-in classes where we use Psych-K twice a month on a sliding scale basis. They're open to whoever wants to attend. And so we definitely we allow different practices so that modality can be accessible.
And you said you do it virtual as well, not just because you're in Orlando, but you do it virtual also.
Yep. I do it virtually and in person.
Yes. That's awesome. Did you want to say something, Paige? All right. So this has been a good topic, a heavy topic. And we don't want to keep you for too long, Katie. So we're going to jump into our Q&A segment to answer a few questions from that.
Okay, this first question is a really tough one. I get emotional just reading it because I can tell there's so much hurt behind it. So here it goes. The first question says, I see your profile says marriage and family counselor, and my husband really struggled with a diagnosis for our son. And sometimes I feel like he resents me. Any tips for how to deal with that in our marriage?
Yeah, so that is definitely a heavy one. And I think, you know, based on our conversations from tonight, that's definitely something that comes up a lot in this community. So, yeah, I would handle it honestly the way I would handle any situation, any topic that's causing resentment between two partners. And part of that, again, I always turn to like getting support in this, because when you're parents and you have a lot going on and you're dealing with diagnoses and things like that, your bandwidth might be pretty short. If you cannot afford support or that's not an option for you, I think doing some self-work first to be able to learn how to consciously communicate. So sometimes we want to make sure that we're not making up a story. Like if say mom feels guilty and then judges that husband resents her because maybe he's exhausted or he feels guilty too. Feeling safe enough to consciously communicate and have a conversation that's like, hey, I feel really sad and scared and guilty. And I have a story in my head that you resent me for this diagnosis. And it's causing me to act in blank, blank way. And start opening up that dialogue. Again, this is best done if you have a supportive safe space. Hiring support, mm-hmm. always great. If you can't, really start to own your story and what you're telling yourself, so that we're not projecting it. Like, you resent me for this, don't you? It's like, this is a story I made up. I have a judgment that you resent me. And this is the impact it's having on me. What's going on here? And you start there. So start with a simple, calm, grounded conversation where you take ownership for how you feel, the story or judgment that you've made up, and what you need to move forward. If you have exhausted your resources after that, as far as where to go next, look for either like pro bono sliding scale therapists. There's so many options now, especially with Zoom, for different parent support groups and things like that. Could be super, super helpful. But I think the first step would be having an honest conversation, releasing blame, shame, and just saying, here's how I feel. Here's my judgment. And here's what I need, and seeing if he can meet you there.
I like that. Do you have resources for some of the parent groups or ones that you recommend for the parent support groups?
Yeah. I can pull a list. Typically, like, when we look at it as trauma-based, I am inclined to go right to the source. So if you're a parent and you're pretty clear that you have trauma, I would invite you to come into a drop-in class where we use Psych-K to get rid of the trauma. Otherwise, a lot of support groups can end up being like conscious talk-based, which means you go and you share stories and things like that, and they're not actually doing anything to eliminate the trauma. So if you're going to invest in it, and it's about, if you say are a parent of a child with a diagnosis and you have no information on that diagnosis, I'm not necessarily the best resource for that. I would connect with y'all and find out what groups are there, what resources to look into. If it's from trauma or a marriage issue, it's interpersonal, And then I would go right for the meat of it. And I would approach subconscious change and psyche. Okay, otherwise, I mean, you might as well just go for it, you know?
Yeah, for sure. The last question says, I have experienced quite a bit of trauma from my childhood and I can see how it affects my family at times. Are there any resources you recommend? And I know you've talked about this a few times, but I guess specifically for families, maybe.
Yeah. And so if, you know, the parent knows that they experienced childhood trauma of their own that's now affecting their family, then I would not make it a family issue. I would make it the parent healing that trauma, because that will help heal the conditioning and the trauma that's being passed down to the child. And so I keep going back to it. I'd recommend the same thing. I'd find a practitioner who can work with subconscious integration. And, or like I mentioned, my partner and I have drop-in group classes where we do that, or private coaching, but I would find somebody that can help support you in releasing your trauma. Because releasing your trauma will release it from your family.
So if your whole family has been affected now from it though, do you feel like when would, I guess, at what point would like a family counselor step in?
I think honestly, you know, depending on how old the child is or the children are, I would work with the parents first and then have the parents help coach the kids on like healthy family habits. And okay, that would be working on like mindfulness, you know, feeling our feelings, creating a supportive environment. Unless there's, you know, if there's active abuse or trauma happening within the home, it's a different issue. But I would have the parents start with the work on themselves. And that will help so that they can start coaching the children.
That sounds like it sets the tone for the whole family when the parents do the work.
Yeah. If the parents are doing their own inner work properly, it's the greatest gift they can ever give their children, and the children will go right along with them. Typically if the children are younger than age 14, the parents doing their own inner work can help heal and solve a lot of that for the children.
Well, this makes me so fired up to continue working on my trauma in my life and in motherhood, because I've got quite the stories, and I know you know those, Katie, but I'm really inspired to keep doing this. And
yeah, you've been so insightful.
Thank you guys. I'm glad you liked it.
I know, I feel like I was quiet because I was just taking it all in.
I know, there was a lot to take in, a lot of good stuff. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us again. And we know you know this, but we appreciate you and we appreciate you tuning in weekly. Please help us spread the word about Tulips and show your support, whether it's by subscribing, purchasing our merchandise, or just sharing when we have a podcast release. We love being able to get the word out to the community, and you guys are so helpful in doing so. And Katie, a huge thank you to you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Katie,
thank all of you.
So insightful.
Thanks, Katie.